Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family. Finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. Now, Mary Donnellan on Mom Talk Radio.
Yes, this is Marian from Mom Talk Radio, and it's a great day to be here and to welcome a lot of fantastic guests we have in store. You have to excuse a little bit of the background noise today. I'm in a different environment, but this is a working in a busy office at Mom Talk Radio. So with that said, I would like to first thank our sponsor, Act Kids Toothpaste. And as moms, we know how important it is to teach good oral hygiene habits to our children from a young age. Proper brushing, flossing, and rinsing are critical steps for a lifetime of good dental care. Go to actoralcare.com and click on the Act for Kids link at the top of the page. There you'll find great tips and tools for getting your kids to brush, floss, rinse, and there's even a great brushing progress chart that's good for teaching kids all those good things, healthy habits, and then giving them rewards. You can also check out Act Kids Toothpaste, and it's for kids ages 2 years and older, please. And with bubblegum and fruit punch flavors that kids love, 4 out of 5 parents say Act Kids Toothpaste motivates their kids to brush. You can find it at Walmart, Walgreens, and Target locations. You can also save money on Act Kids Toothpaste at actkidssavings.com. That's actkidssavings.com. Data on file, use as directed. And I would also like to mention at-home stores. If you go to athome.com, you will find a ton of great decor items. And it leads me into really what is my monologue today, which is back to school. And it is also back to campus. If you go to At Home, you'll find terrific things for your college student, including decor items as well as organization items. So if they're living in an apartment or a dorm, heading off in the next few weeks, check out At Home. You'll find a lot of great stuff there and great prices. It's a super store with really great prices across the board every day. And actually, speaking of back to school, I took my daughter last weekend to go uniform shopping. She goes to a school that requires uniforms, and that was a big hit. But last weekend, unfortunately, I missed the window, but our state, we're in Florida, offers tax-free holiday. So if you are going to be buying everything from uniforms to pens and pencils and paper, and even electronics, actually, you should check out to see if your state does offer tax-free holiday, because in our state, it's 6.5%. That can be a lot of money added up over the year. And I don't know about you, but I got the list from the school, the supply list. Holy cow, it's 2 pages long, and it's everything from, again, what the student needs, pens and notebooks and highlighters. And then they also want like rolls of paper towels and Clorox wipes and those kind of things. So we're basically outfitting a house when we send our kids back to school. So I know my shopping list is going to be pretty hefty. And I did take advantage of the tax-free holiday in my state when we went shopping for the little stuff. The uniform thing, again, I missed that, and that was a pretty big bill. Anyway, I hope you enjoy back-to-school shopping. I actually like back-to-school shopping. It's just like it just signals fall. And, of course, as moms, we know that it's the reset to our calendars as well, because summertime is ending, and we know we get back on the school routine. So when we come back after a quick short break, we're joined by our first guest, Dr. Catherine Perlman. She's the author of Ignore It, and talking about whether we should or should not negotiate with our kids. We're also going to be shining the spotlight on moms, Jen Hardy, who blogs at thesickmomsguide.com. And Kathy Walsh will be here. She's the author of I'm a Little Yogi. So that'll be an interesting conversation about mindful parenting. And then we talked to Andrew Solomon, Far From the Tree Young Adults Edition. So that's another author. And then the last guest, Steve Cardian. He is the author of The New Superpower for Women. He's a self-defense expert. So this is going to be a really important topic for women. So stay with us. We'll take a quick break. Dr. Catherine Perlman is up after this.
This is Mom Talk Radio, the number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio.
This is Marian from Maria on Mom Talk Radio, and I'm pleased to welcome Dr. Catherine Perlman. She is the author of Ignore It and the founder of The Family Coach, and her website is thefamilycoach.com, and she's in private practice specializing in helping families resolve everyday problems from everything from discipline to sleep and sibling rivalry, among many other issues that we all can relate to. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Dr. Perlman.
Thanks for having me.
So congratulations on the book. When did it launch? This is called Ignore It. And you, and when did it launch? And then tell us what inspired you to write it.
Sure. It's actually out on Tuesday, August 8th. And what inspired me to write it is I've been a family coach. I've been a social worker for a long time and in private practice for about 10 years. And in my practice, I make home visits to help people with everyday parenting problems. And no matter what the problem is, no matter why the parent called me, there was always one piece of advice I gave to almost every single parent, and that was to ignore it. So a parent would say, like, what should I do when my kid gets up out of timeout? And I would say, ignore it. What should I do when my kid curses at me? And I would say, ignore it. What should I do when he's complaining or whining or negotiating? All of it was ignore it. And so I just realized this one little piece of advice can change the parenting game significantly. It can help parents really enjoy their time with their kids more. And I thought, if this has been helping so many families, I should write it all down, put it in a book, and hopefully it can help more people.
Right. So you're saying, I'm confused. Ignore it, but don't negotiate. So by ignoring it, you're not negotiating.
Correct. So you say, eat your dinner, and they say, but can I have a bowl of cereal instead? That starts the negotiation, and then you can answer. You say, no, but then after that, it's over. You just turn your back, or you continue to eat your meal, or, you know, the kid asks for something at Starbucks, and you say no, and the tantruming happens. Well, we're going to ignore all of that, because what happens is whenever we give attention, or sometimes we even give in, or we negotiate, the kid learns that that behavior is very effective in getting what they want. So we put a kid in timeout. They're running around the room. It becomes this huge game to get them back in their chair. Nothing is getting accomplished by this. The main idea of timeout is to withdraw our attention. So as soon as we do that, we ignore it. The kid realizes there's no point. I might as well behave and get out of here.
Right. And really, so what they're looking for is a reaction. And so when you react and you're not ignoring it, then they're just going to keep going because they know they're going to, that's the point, even if it's negative reaction, right?
Exactly. Sometimes that's all they want. I mean, think of the teenager who's saying, I hate you, mom, walking away. And then the mom is just instinctively wants to say, I don't care. Some other word, you know, the kid's like, well, I got you. Even if, you know, you're mad at me, I want you to feel how mad I am or something like that. You know, if we don't respond, those words have no meaning. And a kid, believe me, a kid will not continue on with it if it has no benefit.
I feel like you have a lens into my house because I have teenagers and I have a 10-year-old. And it's exactly it. Our instinctive, you know, parenting reaction is to go up and say, wait a minute, you can't talk to me like that. You know, so that's interesting. So give me an idea of the so we know it's a parenting, more or less a self-help book in the genre. But what is it anecdotal? Is it basically tips or checklists in terms of what the book looks like if we were to open it to the middle chapter, let's say?
Sure. So the book kind of goes into, you know, the first part is really about the psychology behind Ignore It. It's something that I've made a modern interpretation, but it's really based on behavioral psychology and well-researched concepts. And so I want to bring parents along. I want them to understand what they're doing. Then the middle part of the book is all about scenarios, how to ignore, and I've been in many homes. I want parents to say, like, yes, this is exactly what happens in my home. So I go through many, many stories from my own family, from my practice with some of my clients, so that parents really finish that section saying, I know exactly how to ignore and what to ignore. And then the final section of the book really is about, you know, learning about rewards and providing logical consequences and natural consequences. And then I end the book with a pep talk because, honestly, sometimes parents have to know they can do this and that they can make this change. And I want to inspire them to, you know, go out there and start ignoring.
Right. So is there, honestly, is there an age limit? Because I feel like if I wanted to start now and I have two teenagers and a 10-year-old, is it too late for the teenagers?
Oh, no, it's a perfect time for the teenagers. I would say even kids that come home from college, whenever there's a kid that's pushing our buttons, that's the time we want to ignore it because they're trying to get a rise out of us. So absolutely, right. Teenagers, it's perfect because honestly, what will happen when you ignore all that is your relationship with that kid is going to improve because instead of the nagging, instead of the back talk, instead of, you know, engaging in all these power struggles, there will be none of that. And then you can focus more on quality time and giving your attention to when they're being delightful instead of when they're harassing you.
So if you, I always struggled with the kids always pick the worst times to, you know, we're rushing out the door and one of them refuses to budge or something like that. So when you really have to get them to do something and they're not doing it, you can't ignore it. Is there any scenario like that where you just simply can't ignore it and have to really make, you know?
Absolutely. There are sometimes that there are going to need to be consequences, and parents should put in consequences for behavior that is required that isn't happening. So the kid has to empty the dishwasher, and he's like, I don't want to empty the dishwasher, and he decides not to do it. Well, I can't ignore that. I can't ignore all the back talk that's going to happen when I enforce a consequence. So I say you empty the dishwasher or you have to do the dishes for dinner for the next three nights, you know, whatever it may be. And then I put in that consequence. When I tell the kid the consequence, there's going to be all kinds of whining and complaining about that. And there's all kinds of whining and complaining about emptying the dishwasher. That I'm going to ignore. But if you don't actually do the chore you're required to do, I'm going to put in a consequence so that the next time I ask you to do it, you're going to remember that uncomfortable situation and you're going to empty the dishwasher.
Gotcha, gotcha. Can I just give you my address right now? Just come.
I'm
since you said
over.
you do in-home visits. I'm like, yeah, let's go. My kids will love you.
Well, actually, I try and train the parents so that they could do it again when I'm not there.
That's it. It's training the parents, not the kids. That's the parents' job, not yours. I'm just teasing.
Yeah,
you.
The kids will respond so quickly when they see you're ignoring it.
That's interesting. Okay. Very, very interesting concept. So you write a syndicated column called Dear Family Coach, and it's been published in some big, you know, Wall Street Journal and regional parenting magazines, which is awesome. So you've got quite an impressive list of media outlets that you – do you currently put information on your blog? In other words, any kind of these tips or advice on your blog?
I do write on my
website.
Blog.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I do. On my website, I do write just mostly about my experience as a parent, and I generally try and save the tips and recommendations for either the Dear Family Coach column or whatever random media outlet that I'm writing for, but mostly on my blog, I talk about being a parent.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on the book that launches this week. Dr. Catherine Perlman, the book is Ignore It, and it is available at bookstores everywhere. And of course, my favorite, Amazon. Thank you so much, and best of luck. And when we come back after this short break, we'll join by Jen Hardy as we shine the spotlight on moms. Stay with us.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
This is the Spotlight on Moms, one of my favorite segments of Mom Talk Radio, and we have a terrific guest today, Jen Hardy. You're going to love this. She's a mom of seven children, ranging in age from 5 to 27. She blogs at thesickmomsguide.com, and she's the author of The Sick Mom's Guide to Having Fun Again, If I Can Do It, You Can Too, and it's available on Amazon. And we're talking about health issues that you have and how you handle that as and being a very busy mom of seven. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Jen.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah. So tell us about it. First of all, the book. Tell us a little bit about your family and what made you write the book.
Well, we have an older group of kids, and we also have a younger group of kids. And when I started getting really sick, it was about 4 years ago, and I would spend a week in the hospital and be home for a couple weeks and a week in the hospital. And so my older kids were basically raising my younger kids while my husband was trying to coordinate my care and everything. And I was stuck in bed for about 4 months where I just couldn't get up and really do much of anything. And so I started looking online at how to be a mom, you know, when I'm in this place, because I thought there's so many moms with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia or going through cancer treatments. And there's got to be stuff out there that's like positive and upbeat for, you know, how in the world do you take care of your home and your children and your everything when you're so sick? And I could not find a thing. I found a lot of venting things, which, you know, sometimes we need to vent and get it all out, but I couldn't find anything positive. And my husband and I kept talking and talking. And about a year ago, he said, you know, you can't find it. You know, you're the one who's supposed to create it. Mm-hmm. And so we decided that I was going to go ahead and write a blog. And through that and through talking to a bunch of people, what they really wanted to know is, how could I enjoy my kids when I can't enjoy my life? You know, when I'm just so down and so exhausted. And right. So I thought, you know, I'm going to write this book, but not just about having fun, but it starts with ditching the guilt, because there's a lot of guilt that comes when you feel like this, you know, because we think about so many things we can't do. And so in the book, I try to talk about, you know, you need to just make peace with where you are. get rid of the guilt, be the best mom you can be exactly where you're at. And then finding joy around you in your own like mom space, creating beauty where you are. If you're going to be on the couch or in bed or, you know, at home more than you're out, just make that space good. And then I've got 100 things you can do with your kids, half of them when you can't even get off the bed. So now if a mom doesn't feel good, she's got a place to go to find a way to have fun and be active or actively engaged with everybody, right, no matter how she feels.
It doesn't have to be mountain climbing or hiking. It can be whatever you can do within the limits and or reasonable expectations of your health. So we've worked with mom bloggers for many years, and I can tell you moms blog about things like this, but it's more about their journey. But you've flipped the coin and said, this is, let's just be positive about this, which is really, really inspirational.
Right. And I try to be, you know, not fake positive, because that doesn't, I don't feel like that does any good for anybody, you know? So I have a support group, Chronically Positive Moms, that's on Facebook right now. And, you know, we work on, you know, there's days when we just, you know, just get it out. Cause if you don't get the negative out, you know, you can't move through it.
Right.
But then we always bring it back to, okay, now that's out. Now what, how can we turn that into a good thing? Because it is so easy to get caught up in all that. But I've done it. I've learned how to change my attitude, and my whole life is so much better. Even I'm sicker now, but my life is 10 times better than it was when I was healthy.
Wow.
Because my attitude's better.
Again, on the flip side, it means to people like me who I'm healthy. I should be so grateful. And I think gratefulness is a big portion of people that are listening to you. I hope that are healthy and have healthy children are also grateful for that. Did you find that once you put your blog out there, and like you just mentioned, a Facebook group for called Chronically Positive, did you find that support quickly? And did you see that?
It's amazing.
Did you experience that?
Yeah. I've got moms from 4 different continents that are part of my group.
Yeah.
And with, you know, with social media and everything, and it's amazing. And no matter where they are, if they're in India or if they're in Europe or if they're in Australia or here, we all are going through the same thing, even though there are some cultural differences. But the struggle is the same. You know, and the guilt,
no matter where you are,
no matter where you are, no matter what the people around you are doing. And so it's been really nice to see, you know, that we're not alone. And that's I'm trying to really, really emphasize that with everybody, is no matter what you're going through, you know, somebody else is going through something similar, you know, find those people, whatever it is that you're struggling with. And it makes it so much better to know that you're not alone out there.
Thank you so much for joining us, Jen, and good luck on, again, the Sick Mom's Guide to Having Fun again. And it's available on Amazon, blogging at thesickmomsguide.com. After this short break, we'll talk to Kathy Walsh, author of I'm a Little Yogi. Stay with us.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend. Now, Mary Donnellan on Mom Talk Radio.
Mary, and for Maria, we turn the conversation to kids yoga. It's interesting. I've heard a lot about it. Kids that do yoga, it's great for adults as well, mind, body, spirit. And Kathy Walsh is the author of I'm a Little Yogi. She is a parenting expert, educator, and mindfulness coach. And her website is joyoboy.com. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Kathy.
Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on the book. When did it launch? And where can we find it?
So it launched about a month ago, and it's on Amazon. It's called I'm a Little Yogi.
Great. Tell us a little bit about the book.
It takes you through the classes that I teach children. So it really takes you through the poses, different yoga poses, and they kind of go on a magic carpet ride into a forest, and they see an eagle, and it's kind of like experiencing mindfulness and movement in one book.
You teach yoga classes to kids offline, basically, in your community?
I do teach yoga classes to kids in my community at different places. Sometimes when I'm in New York, I teach in New York as well, if I'm at a vegetarian festival. And what I'd like to do is yoga, meditation, and mindfulness all in one. So it's the poses plus positive, you know, affirmations plus breathing and relaxing at the end.
So is this, this is part of a series, the Joy Oh Boy book series?
Yeah, the Joy Oh Boy book series is now 10 books, And they're all focused on teaching children about gratitude and positive, that their thoughts have energy and what they put out, they get back, and, you know, being grateful for things in their life and really focusing on love.
Awesome. I'm a Little Yogi is a children's book?
It's for children. That's a good question. And they're picture books. So they're up to like age 8. That's what we found. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Awesome. A very good friend of mine locally here in South Florida has a studio, and she offers strictly kids classes, which I think is fantastic. Oh. I mean, especially for my teenagers need some mindfulness.
They do. And if they get it when they start, if they start really young, which is what I like to work with, like, you know, 3 to 8-year-olds, once they get it, and first of all, they're so open to it. They're so receptive, and they love it. They soak it in. I was at the Vegetarian Festival in New York, and I was like, how am I going to teach meditation? How am I going to do a meditation with people and the music? But actually, they looked right at me. They were mine. And I was like, listen, we're going to connect to peace. Like, we're just going to do this right now. And they were like, yep, we are. Like, they didn't even look around. It was so cute. So, and if you That's get awesome. Them younger, by the time they're teenagers and they know how to connect in their body and breathe, they can help combat some of the anxiety that they have as teenagers. Mm-hmm.
So then you also want to talk about mindful parenting. What do you mean by that?
Mindful parenting is really just really having a focus in the home that really has an intention to your parenting. It has a focus on being positive. There's some, you know, where you write positive notes to kids, and you really focus on accepting them the way they are and not trying to change them, because, as you know, right, you can't really.
Right. So. Right.
Can only help them be the best that they can be. And so, and it talks about balance, like how do you balance technology and all the, you know, it's just that these kids are bombarded by so much information and stuff all day long, and homework and books and reading and after school activities and sports. And so how do you balance that? It's kind of like, there's like tips on how to do that. And, you know, and really how to end the day where you focus, give them 20 minutes of your time, focus on them, breathe together, say some things you're grateful for, plant some seeds into them about, you know, sleeping peacefully and having a nice evening and just being grateful for what they do have.
So can parents do yoga with their kids? Is that something you recommend?
So in this fall, I'm starting in Santa Fe doing a whole Saturday classes, and they're going to be parents come in to the class. And I'll tell you why. I did a class last year in Santa Fe, and we had 25 parents and 25 kids. I couldn't believe how many people showed up. And it was actually so lovely because the parents need this too. They actually do need
it. Absolutely.
And, you know, they need to breathe and be with their kids and spend that hour with them. And they need, like, they look at each other in my class and they say, the light in me sees the light in you. They say, you are a bright and shining star to their mom or dad, you know? And so I think it's important. If they want to come, they can come to mine. So I just think it's nice if you can. And in my new website, Peace Place for Kids, which is launching, it's up now. You can sign up for the MailChimp and all that stuff. But when we launch the videos, they're going to be streaming videos. So, because we found that people just don't have the time to get to class, but they may want to do it at home with their kids.
Yeah, definitely. I was saying right before this segment, I told you I have a site I use when I want to do some yoga, and you can even pick the time. And I know you're supposed to do a full practice, you know, from beginning to end. Sometimes I have 30 minutes. I don't have 90, you know, so I just do what I can do, figuring that's better than nothing. So.
Oh, with parents, I never say supposed to, because you know what? It's like, if you can do 10 minutes, I always say, look, if you're putting them to bed anyway, why not just do a little meditation with them? Like, even if you put on a tape and you both lie there, like whatever you
That's
can
true.
Fit in is what you can fit in. That's it.
Right,
if you're on your
right.
way to school and you're like, hey, let's say one thing we're grateful for today. Like, it's not, this doesn't have to be, it can't be time consuming. Nobody has time. Nobody
right,
even.
Right.
And my kids are older, and I still, when I'm with them, I'm so focused on them. And, you know, I always feel like they're the main thing in the day. And so, there's not enough time for it all.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. So I love it. Mindful parenting. And the book again is called I'm a Little Yogi. The website is actually to joyoboy.com, and then peaceplaceforkids.com. That's PEACE is going to be yoga videos that you can watch anytime. Correct?
Yes. Absolutely.
That's awesome. Great ideas. And congratulations on the book and best of luck. And when we take a after the short break, we'll be joined by Andrew Solomon. He is the author of Far From the Tree, Young Adult Edition. It'll be talking about how kids can be their best selves. Stay with us.
This is Mom Talk Radio, the number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio.
It's Mom Talk Radio, and I'm pleased to welcome Andrew Solomon. He is a very well-known and published author of Far From the Tree, Young Adults Edition, a professor of psychology at Columbia University, and president of the Penn American Center. And again, has a very extensive media list, including TED Talks, which I love. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Andrew.
What a thrill to be here. Thank you.
I'm thrilled. I'm talking to an actual TED talker. So you have written Far From the Tree, Young Adults Edition.
Well, I wrote the original version of Far From the Tree, which was longer and more detailed, and then I've adapted it into a young adult edition. It was designed as a young adult edition, but that it is also selling, I think, to adults who just want a quicker read than the original version. It's a book about how families respond to having children who are different from them in some way. It was really an attempt to look at what happens when a family that sees itself as normal has a child whom they perceive to be in some way abnormal. But I think it becomes interesting both for parents and for kids more broadly, because all parents have the experience sometimes of looking at their kids and thinking, I wonder what planet you came from. And all kids have the experience from time to time of looking at their parents and thinking, how could these people possibly be the ones who created me? And so it's a book that really tries to plumb the complexities of the relationships between parents and children, and to look through these more vigorous circumstances of what it means to be a parent and what it means to be a kid and how they form their relationships. And ultimately, in looking at all of these forms of difficulty, it positions the idea that parenting involves a lot of difficulty and that it provides significant challenges. But a lot of the people I talked to, even with kids with these rather severe disabilities, ended up being grateful for lives they'd have done anything to avoid because they were so attached to their children. And I wanted to capture the model of resilience that's involved there to look at how parents come to love kids who aren't what they had in mind when they decided to have kids.
Resiliency, not only in children, but their parents.
But how do you keep going when you discover these things about your child that are so shocking? And a lot of the parents I met ended up saying, you know, I wouldn't have chosen this path, but it's been very meaningful and I've learned a lot from it. And there was a great study that showed they interviewed women who had just had kids who were diagnosed with a variety of difficulties. And they said, do you think you'll find meaning in this experience? And then they went back to the same family 5 years later. And the parents who had said they expected to find meaning in the experience had children who were doing better in every clinical measure than the ones who had said that they didn't expect to find meaning in the experience. So when you make that move toward finding meaning, you're ultimately doing not only yourself a favor, because it makes your life a little bit easier to live, you're also doing a really gigantic favor for your kids. And one of the mothers I talked to, because I kept thinking, well, come on, all of these parents who talk about how, you know, I learned so much, it was all so profound, I grew so much, and I thought, but you don't really wish it. And one of the moms I interviewed said to me, you know, people always give us these little sayings like, God doesn't give you any more than you can handle. But children like ours are not preordained as a gift. They're a gift because that's what we have chosen. And
right.
I tend to think there was a lot of choice in that process. There's a lot of choice in figuring out how to love the kid you got, who is not necessarily the same as the kid you wanted or imagined.
That's right. So the book is more or less anecdotal interviews. Give me the format.
It's a mix. I mean, I have some research and some numbers and statistics in it, just because I think you need to know those in order to understand the context of what's there. But it's mostly
and the parameter,
that really the stories of families. I mean, when I was working on the book, I interviewed more than 300 families. I pulled the ones whose stories I thought were most compelling and really tried to get at, you know, we all know the narrative of you have a kid who has a difference or a disability and you can't deal with it and you go to pieces. But we don't necessarily know the story of how people manage to deal successfully with those challenges. So it's really the story of a lot of those families. And, you know, I think, for instance, one of the families I spent a lot of time with was the family of a guy named Clinton Brown, who was born with a condition called diastrophic dwarfism. And the doctors mm-hmm. said to his parents in the hospital, he's never going to learn to walk or talk or recognize you. You might as well leave him here at the hospital to die quietly. He won't live very long. And his parents had very limited economic and educational resources, but his mom eventually found her way to the best doctor for the treatment of his condition in the United States, who was down at Johns Hopkins, went down there, and the doctor there said to her, let me tell you, this is going to be a handsome young man one day. And in the course of his childhood, he had all these surgical procedures to correct the twisting and deformity of his bones, as a result mm-hmm. of which he actually can now walk. And while he was stuck in the hospital all that time, he decided there was nothing else much to do and he might as well focus on his schoolwork. And he became the first member of his family to go to college. And when I said to his mother, what did you do that allowed this kid who had so many problems to turn out ultimately as someone who's happy and successful and accomplished and popular? And she said, what did we do? We loved him, that's all. Clinton just always had that light in him. And we were fortunate enough to be the first to see it there. Since I finished the book just last month, I went to his wedding, which was one of the most joyful weddings I've ever attended.
That's wonderful. It's a great story. So it is available on Amazon.
Well, yep.
Just got published. So last month, you said?
Last week.
Oh, last week. Oh, congratulations.
I'm now working on a book that's about how our idea of family has broadened to include interracial families, to include mm-hmm. working mothers and more involved fathers, single parents. Awesome. By choice or otherwise, gay families, multi-parent families. So I'm looking at all of that. I'm in the process of finding people to interview. I'm reachable at andrewsolomon.com. So if anyone wants to talk to me about their family, reach out. I'd love to hear from everyone.
Solomon, all O's, S-O-L-O-M-O-N.com. And before we close really quick, your journey has been interesting as well, accepting your own identity and your research. You culminated in your midlife decision to be a parent.
You know, I felt I started the book in order to forgive my parents for the challenges they'd thrown my way as a gay kid. And I resolved what I was learning in the book by becoming a parent halfway through writing it. And people said, how can you be deciding to become a parent in the midst of this book about everything that can go wrong? And I had to explain over and over again that it wasn't a book about everything that could go wrong, but a book about how much joy there could be in having a family, even if everything was going wrong. And I have, my husband is the biological father of two kids with some lesbian friends in Minneapolis. My best friend mm-hmm. from college had gotten divorced but wanted to have a kid, so we have a daughter who lives with her mom and her mom's male partner in Texas, and then my husband and I live in New York with our son, of whom I'm the biological father. We had an egg donor, and our surrogate was Laura, the lesbian mother of his two bio kids. So it's a complicated structure, but it's turned out to be just full of joy for all of us.
Because you're resilient and you love that. You just want to love them. That's all we can do, right? Thank you so much for joining us, Andrew Solomon. Again, the book is Far From the Tree, Young Adults Edition. It is available on Amazon, just hot off the presses. So grab it. It sounds like some really amazing stories. And when we come back after the short break, we're joined by Steve Carter. He is the author of The New Superpower for Women. We'll be right back.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
Pleased to welcome Steve Cardian. He is the author of The New Superpower for Women. Steve is a self-defense and criminal expert who regularly appears on television and in print, has been on Dr. Phil, CNN, Fox, Headline News, Fox and Friends, rather, Today's Show, Wall Street Journal, you name it. That's an impressive list, Steve. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio.
My pleasure, Mary. Thank you.
This is a great topic and a very important one for women, basically self-defense. Tell us a little bit about the book, when we can find it on bookshelves, and what's in the book.
The book will be available August 8th. Simon & Schuster is the publisher. It's very different. You know, you mentioned self-defense. It's a huge part of what we do. You know, self-defense is a last resort for women. When they have to resort to self-defense, everything else is broken down. So I create instructors that teach my program. It's a reality-based anti-sexual assault, anti-domestic violence, anti-kidnapping. And we actually, unlike what you'd see in a karate program, you know, we actually put the women in positions they'd find themselves in, God forbid, if they were being somehow accosted or attempted to be violated. So in the book, we have intuition, putting you in touch, you know, with the gift of intuition. My first experience with it was at 17 years old. 7 Seconds, which covers basically the predator mindset, in that as well that the predator in less than 7 seconds can select the soft target. Then we delve into awareness, situational awareness, deeply to try and allow you to turn on that radar when you need it. The red zone for college age students, you know, freshman year between September and Thanksgiving recess is the most dangerous time in a young woman's life. Second most dangerous is same time period during sophomore year. Then we delve into social situations for women of all ages, especially, you know, women in the workforce and women that are already out of college. Creating a blueprint, huge aspect of what I do. In law enforcement, we call it visualization. The military calls it emergency conditioning, where you envision yourself being exposed to some sort of a threat, somebody trying to break into your home, someone following you in a parking lot, and you come up with a plan of action to deal with that. And your mind doesn't know whether you've actually, if you think of it vividly enough, it doesn't know if you, you know, thought about it or if you actually did it. So it creates a file as if you have. And it's a blueprint to go to, which will help control your adrenal response and so on and so forth. And then we have one chapter on actual self-defense. And then we delve into the digital environment, which is ever so important for not only our young, but women of all ages, women and men of all ages, if you will.
This all is covered in your book, including how to make the blueprint.
I've done it in law enforcement over, oh my God, millions of times.
Can you give us a few tips on the best weapons a woman should have to defend herself if she's in a difficult or threatening situation?
Yeah, you're talking about weapons as in improvised, like pepper spray and...
Yeah, your keys. I always heard, you know, you put your keys in between your fingers if you're walking out, let's say, in the mall or something like that.
You know, that's actually a falsehood that has been around for a long time. If you actually did that, put your fingers in, keys between your finger, and say you punch something soft like a pillow, you'll feel that if you actually hit like a human being, you would probably break your fingers. So if you're going to use your keys as a weapon, we would encourage you to use what we call a hammer or ice pick movement, where you would have them opposite your thumb at the bottom of your hand, and you would actually strike with them with a hammer-like movement, if you will. You know, that would be encouraging.
So forget the keys. Bad example on my part. That we should be carrying with us in our purse, in our car, et cetera.
First of all, let me say a disclaimer. It doesn't matter what you carry, whether it's a pepper spray, a bazooka, a Sherman tank, practice with it. That's the most important thing. I'm a huge advocate of pepper spray. I've been a pepper spray instructor for 15 years, and I encourage one that has a handle. I carry a Tiger Light Dad, which actually wraps around your hand. You could use it when you're jogging. It has a GPS alert. In other words, you tell you're gonna tell your husband, your boyfriend, your dad, I'm going out for a jog. He knows you're going out for a jog. If you encounter a situation and you deploy the pepper spray, it sends a GPS signal to you, all your alerts that you're in danger, and sends the exact location where you are. It also has a very powerful flashlight with a strobe light effect. And the strobe light, especially in night, it actually temporarily blinds you. We call it a Kodak moment. So I like that. And when you're frightened, scared, or approached or accosted, you have an autonomic response where your hands will open. With this pepper spray wrapped around your hand, even if you're attacked, grabbed, thrown to the ground, or frightened, you'll still have it and be able to use it. Have it within reach and practice it so it becomes muscle memory.
So give us the website where we can find information, and again, where we can find the book.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, The New Superpower for Women. DefendUniversity.com is my website. Actually, you purchase the book, I give you 10 techniques that for free that you can view online when you visit the site.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us again. The New Superpower for Women, DefendUniversity.com. Thank you all for listening to Mom Talk Radio. And please check momtalkradio.com for this show and other shows from our archives. Have a wonderful week.